Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Nick Hale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, and Chase McCabe with you. Let's welcome in our next guest. He's been kind enough to join us for the last couple of months throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs and the finals, and he's joining us one last time before he goes on a summer sabbatical. We welcome in Greg Wyshynski, ESPN NHL senior writer. What's going on, Greg?
Summer sabbatical starts mid-July, I think, for me. But it's usually the good rule of thumb for American hockey writers is that we all sit around waiting for the insiders in Canada to start tweeting about how they're going to their cabins, and then we know it's safe to maybe like take a nap or something during the day.
Greg, what do you think Alexander Ovechkin's blood alcohol content is right now currently?
I think his blood is actually clear at this point. He is a Russian machine. He does not break, but I do believe he has the liver of a 75-year-old man at this point. It's really the greatest thing ever. Like, you know, I said this before on ESPN when I wrote about Ovechkin's 100 hours of partying after winning the Cup. But, like, I used to think I knew what catharsis looked like. And then I saw what Ovechkin did after he finally won a championship. And that's catharsis, man. Like, the absolute embodiment of joy since he won. And, you know, the thing about him, too, and about the Capitals as a whole after they won the Cup is I can't recall another time where the celebration for a team was so specific to the city itself. You know, parading the Cup through the streets of Georgetown in an impromptu sort of parade, you know, the snow angels and the public fountain, the whole thing. Like, it's, you know, a lot of times these teams win and they sneak behind the velvet rope at their favorite clubs and you don't get to see these celebrations. But for the Capitals, it's been very public and very sort of sharing the moment with a fan base that had been there with them through all these previous failures.
Greg, one of the things we were talking about last segment, we played the audio of Alex Ovechkin going nuts at the parade and the celebration, and we started pondering, you know, if and when the Preds do win the Stanley Cup, who would be the guy on the roster that is the closest to Alex Ovechkin from a just living it up and living his best life? From everything you gather, who would that guy be for the Preds, in your opinion?
If he's a major part of it, and let's hope he still is, it'd be Pekka, wouldn't it? Like this,
yeah.
This guy's, you know, his going hard in all walks of life has always been a thing I've heard from teammates and people around the league. So you have to imagine, and then you talk about another guy that like has been you know living life every season, trying to get to this point in his career to capture the Cup. You imagine there's going to be the same sort of emotional release from a veteran player like that. So he'd be my choice, but I mean, you know, the more you think about it and the Preds, it may not necessarily be a Pekka Rinne's team. It might be Juuse Saros's team by the time they actually pull this thing off.
Now, how long will it be? Because obviously the big elephant in the room for the Capitals is whether Trotsky gets a deal worked out or not. Do you think he gets a deal? Do you think he's back in Washington? And then, two, how long do you think it is before, you know, things start to come into play and things start to go uphill or downhill in regards to contracts?
Yeah, I mean, I imagine he's back only because we have to kind of go based on what him and his general manager, Brian McClellan, have said. Like, McClellan said on the ice, I asked him about it after they won the Cup, and he's like, you know, Barry's back if he wants to be back. And so, you know, then I went over to Barry Trotz and said, hey, do you want to be back? And he said, you know, these guys are my kids. You know, we're not really talking too much about contract right now or thinking about it right now. But every indication that Trotz has given is that he intends to come back to the Capitals. I mean, he even referred to it as, you know, trying to win a second straight cup at the parade yesterday. So, if he has a desire to come back, it sounds like the Capitals are ready to ink him to a deal commiserate with his level of success. It is an interesting situation. Todd Reirden is an assistant coach there. He's been groomed to be a head coach for the Capitals or elsewhere. So you wonder if the guy who ran the Caps defense this year might be maybe a contender for the Islanders job or someplace else if Barry comes back long term. And again, you know, I go back and forth on whether he should, to be honest with you. Like, you know, once you win a cup with the Capitals, I'm not quite sure what else you have to do there. I mean, I know they're talking back to back and all this stuff, but the conditions for this postseason run were very specific and very favorable. And I wonder whether or not he's signing a contract to just, you know, inevitably get fired after making a pretty healthy salary over the next like 3 years.
Greg, I'm assuming you've seen the whatever is happening in Ottawa right now. If you can give us a brief synopsis of what you understand the situation to be, and does that affect this giant scandal between teammates in Ottawa? Does that affect, because certain teams, Nashville included, have inquired about acquiring Erik Karlsson, one of the best defensemen on the planet, but now he's embroiled in this really bizarre, weird scandal. Give us a quick kind of recap of that, and does that impact his trade value in any way?
Yeah, you have a situation where Mike Hoffman, his teammate, Hoffman's fiance, has been accused of basically cyberbullying Erik Karlsson's wife, writing just horrific things about the death of their unborn child, and making wild accusations about Karlsson's wife and drug abuse. And so there's been in a police inquiry into the matter. There's not been anything formal against the fiance yet, as far as a restraining order or that kind of thing, I don't think, or obviously any charges for stalking or that sort of thing. But it's an incredibly detailed scandal and one that kind of makes you wonder exactly how these two people were able to coexist on the same roster. I think it's less affecting of Karlsson than it is of Hoffman. Because obviously there's a bit of baggage that comes with him if you acquire him for your team. He's a highly sought-after player, a very accomplished goal scorer, a young player. The St. Louis Blues and other teams have been in on Hoffman. But you wonder how this whole thing coming out like it has. One, you wonder whether or not teams that were in on Hoffman knew about it, because frankly, I had heard that there was an issue between him and a personal issue between him and the Senators. That obviously was this situation that came out yesterday in the Ottawa Citizen. So you wonder what teams know and whether that scares them off or whether it's something they think is just manageable and maybe something that they can, overlook if there's a change in scenery for Hoffman. But it's one of the truly most bizarre scandals that we've seen come down the pike in a really long time in hockey. And it's like the cherry on the crap sundae for the Senators, who have had a number of different scandals and problems in the last year, including their assistant general manager recently getting a restraining order put on him by a male 19-year-old hotel employee in Buffalo for having made advances on that 19-year-old while they were in a bus. So that's a mess up there in Ottawa right now.
Greg, great stuff as always. We really appreciate your time throughout the spring and the summer. Enjoy your summer, and we'd love to catch up with you again as we get closer to the next